froth and effervescent principle on the fantastical world of Keyforge, discussing lore, rules, strategies, decks, organized play, and of course, the Nordic Keyforge League. We wield the lash of broken dreams to send you into a waking nightmare. Ring low or sending Groke, either way, we aim to steal away that victory that you were so sure of. This is the Nordic Keyforge Podcast. Welcome, everyone, to the Nordic Keyforge Podcast. My name is Jason, the Captain Kirk, and I'm joined today with Jonas, Hydrophilic Attack. Welcome.
Hi, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm not sure if I'm Scottish or Irish. I think I went between the two.
Somewhere in between.
Yep, if I've offended anyone, I'm very sorry. Cool. Well, Happy New Year, everyone. Happy New Year, Jonas. How was your Christmas break, your mellandaga, as it's known here in Sweden, the middle days?
It was good. I've not been working at all, so I had a full week off between Christmas and New Year's, and I'm having a full week off before the 13 days after Christmas, Epiphany.
Yes.
Yeah. So, the way I remember that is I never remember the name, and then I have an epiphany, and I remember the name.
I was just going to ask you, have you had any epiphanies recently?
Yeah. So I've just been at home like a slug, like doing, like playing video games, like a completely disgusting slug monster, just spread out doing nothing. So yeah,
stop rubbing it in my face. Like, I mean, I love my kids, but I just wish I could do that just for one day, you know. Yeah. But then I think if I had just one day to do that, I'd probably just get up and play more Keyforge. if I could. Yeah. So cool.
How about you? How was your Christmas break?
My Christmas break was not as relaxing as I wanted it to be, yet actually really good. I got to spend a lot of time with my family, which is really good. Not a huge amount of Keyforge, but I was playing in the Swindle team events, which I'll talk about in the next section. But it was really, really nice, actually. I spent a bit of time with my wife's family. My family couldn't make it over from the UK, unfortunately. So a lot of video calls, a lot of FaceTime. The Android version of FaceTime. Facebook Messenger and everything. It was really good, actually. I'm back to work on Monday as well. I had a couple of weeks off. So, yeah, really, really good. Trying to kind of, you know, calm down any kind of, you know, war threats and, you know, deal with... that happened in the last episode.
It seemed they escalated.
It escalated quite quickly, didn't it? For those of you who don't really know what we're talking about, Simon somehow declared very quickly, escalated to declaring war on the Help for Future Self podcast, and very quickly they retaliated, basically because they, you know, they copied what we did and managed to release an episode before us. Maybe not have copied it, but they released an episode about the same subject before us. Simon declares war. But their retaliation was quite interesting. Did you hear it?
Yeah, I heard it. The most interesting part was, I think it was not meant to be a retaliation or insult, but they called us a regional Keyforge podcast. So that sounded like there was some contempt in there.
Yeah, a regional Keyforge part. You know, I thought myself as, you know, we may be recording this in the Nordics, in Sweden, But I thought we were more international than that. I don't know. Maybe that was their kind of their real retaliation.
Yeah, yeah. Those words really stung.
Yeah, exactly. I think that because their retaliation was that, you know, that they would think about not do it, but think about throwing any Nordic people out of their Discord server, which feels very Canadian to me. I don't know if you think about that. It's a very nice, polite retaliation, I think. It's like, we're not going to do too much, but we'll think about throwing you out of our server.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, throwing, actually doing it, that would not have been polite, but yeah, thinking about it.
Yeah.
But I think maybe this regional is even more Canadian. It's like it's a completely accurate description of our server, but it somehow, and probably not even intentionally, I'm not sure, but it somehow manages to sting anyway.
Yeah, like, it does.
Really,
it does.
Really passive aggressive jab, right where it hurts.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, we'll see what comes out of this episode if we decide. Simon isn't available tonight, so we might be able to strike a peace treaty while he's away. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he should have been on this call if he wanted to perpetuate this war, I guess. So exactly, he lost his chance.
Great. How did you play much KeyForge? You said you played a lot of games, but
no, I didn't play any KeyForge at all. I got completely obsessed with a single video game that I played for like 50 hours in a week.
Oh, wow. Which game?
It's a game released last year called Returnal. It's like a third-person shooter roguelike with some interesting psychological horror, cosmic horror stuff. It's not a game you can play if you have a family, because each run takes like 5 hours, and if you die, you have to start over from the beginning, and it's like super punishing. but I had a really good time with it. I'm glad I had a week off so I could play it and finish it. And it's not a game I could play when I'm working, I think.
No. I miss playing those open world games that I played before I became a parent. Zelda, Breath of the Wild. I must have 120 hours on that even before I faced the boss. Yeah. And I was ready to go and do it before. I just enjoyed just walking around this open world doing absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. Cool. I've been playing in Swindle Team events, and we've done okay, actually. Unfortunately, in the last week, we were knocked out. But at the same time, I was actually really pleased about my last game, and unfortunately, the tiebreaker didn't go so well for us, because, we were I think preparing for it to be a reversal, so we prepared more for the reversal side of the Newton format,
and that one is just a coin flip for the deciding game, right?
Yeah, it's a coin flip as well. So we sent in one of my teammates with my deck up against one of their better decks, and the coin flip went to Archon, and it's a game where actually I probably should have taken that myself. But if it was reversal, then my teammate was the best pick for this as well. So that didn't quite go our way. But one thing that this has done for us is, because you have to play Argon, it's that adaptive question. So we have to bring decks that you can play well, but your opponent might not understand straight away how you play it. And within our team, it's been a really, really fun experience doing the Swindle Team events, because I managed to find, and Karen Brown, who is our kind of team overall Swindle Team leader, she really helped me understand something I could do about with this deck that I hadn't seen before. And it really made me think about the previous episode that we had with the archetypes and talk about deck archetypes, because this deck was not the kind of deck that I thought you could do this for. And I realized, actually, it kind of backs up some of the things that I said at the end of the episode, where your deck might have one archetype, but then you can find more things it can do, and maybe a secondary or tertiary archetype that it have, and it's getting to know that as well. And so I've fallen in love with this Dark Tidings. There's a Dark Tidings deck as well, which in my game I 3-0'd against the decks, which was felt like the game, one of the games of my life, playing up against a huge Worlds Collide board deck, which should have beaten me, it should have thrashed me, but I was able to take 3-1 and even beat my deck 3-1 as well. It's been a really, really good experience as well. So actually, if anyone is interested to kind of take their game to the next level, go get into the team game a little bit as well. And so you can really learn from each other in a team, learn from your decks, learn from the other decks, help each other with deck selection as well. So, little plug for Swindle Team events there. Get involved. And then I've also just been, trying to consider my lineup for the Nordic Keyforge League this season.
Mm. Are you making big changes?
I want to bring in two decks. Mm-hmm. However, I don't have two decks that I want to take out of my lineup. Mm. And we can't have an 8-deck lineup. So I've got some interesting decisions to make. But I found two decks basically that I bought, and I forgot that I bought them. Mm. And they were just like in my kind of box of decks that I haven't played yet, thinking, these are really good decks. Why haven't I played these yet? Oh, yeah, I bought these decks. Oh, yeah, I paid quite a bit of money for these decks. Why did I forget that?
Yeah, that's if you have more money than time. You just buy decks and you don't even remember you have them.
I know, yeah. Right? And I don't even have that much money. But it was just one of the things where, they were good. So I'm kind of practicing these decks to see if actually they're better than anything that I took this season. But I was on the verge of not doing any changes at all, because I just want to give the decks that I've got some time of day as well.
Having more decks, like having too many decks that you want to fit into your lineup, that's a good problem compared to the opposite, I guess.
That is true. But I did really well, and actually one of my I was chatting to another league member randomly, played a game with them on TCO this week, and I'm kind of considering the whole going for the all similar decks that we talked about in a previous episode against trying to find an answer for everything in your deck selection, and those two different strategies, and then the third strategy of taking the decks that you know how to play. And I did really well before I changed my lineup with just knowing my decks, and then I didn't know my decks in the last season. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of thinking, actually, if I just keep the lineup, then I could maybe just get good at the ones that I have. So that's the one, that's where I'm thinking. Maybe I've said too much already, but I don't know. How's your deck lineup this season?
I'm switching one deck out to a similar deck that's better in what that kind of deck can do, and that's it. Otherwise, it's the same.
Otherwise, it's the same.
I mean, I did quite well with my lineup, so I'm going to...
Yeah.
Basically, I'm going to keep with this focus I have until I see the meta shifting, because I have... My favorite decks are board decks, and I think the meta is really punishing for board decks, so I have chosen the kinds of deck that really punish the decks that punish my board decks, and I'm going to keep playing that until people get sick of losing against that. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah. No, I think I do enjoy board decks. I do enjoy actually playing with the cards in my deck rather than, one of the ways that I played with my deck to actually win the last time was just, I just had to keep discarding. And I was like, this is great, but my deck can do so much more than this.
What's that? Were you up against Quicksilver decks or something like that?
No, I was up against a big Worlds Collide board deck, which board against board, and their Ember Control was basically Brobnar
fighting
stuff, and so basically just only playing the creatures that would give me something And it was nothing. Then I, you know, had backup plan with Think Twice, and so I could then archive half of my deck.
Oh, that's a cool play.
Up against a big board.
Yeah.
Then by doing that, I then get out all the pieces of the puzzle for you know, good chance of getting all the pieces of the puzzle out for Groundbreaking Discovery.
Yeah, nice.
Smack Groundbreaking Discovery. Anything they've captured goes into my pool.
Yeah, and their nice big board.
Yeah, that nice big board in there. Discard pile and but it also felt in the way of, okay, it's a good strategy, but I want to play my deck. I want to play my three Agungs. My I want to play with my exploratory spacecraft. What's the that artifact, the ship?
Exploratory craft,
yeah, which can also get me through my deck. It's such a quick deck as well, but yeah. Anyway, I've been rambling on enough about this deck and Swindle Team events and our Forge Knights as well. Should we get on with the main section today?
Yes.
What are we talking about?
So we're talking about Amber Control, right?
Yes, we are. Yes, we are. Now we have found our papers. Now we have found everything in front of us. We're talking about Amber Control, and this is going to be one of those fun episodes where we just kind of talk through some of our favorite Amber Control cards, or even combos here, but also bring up the subject of Amber Control in its purity, in what it is. And this is kind of linked to the archetype thing, because obviously Ember Control decks is one of the archetypes that we talked about, but we want to follow on from that conversation in a few weeks to talk about matchups and actually archetypes that are good or bad against each other and how we match up those. And so if you have questions, that would really help us out. If you have questions, things that, you know, the direction that you as our listener want this discussion to go, that can help us plan out that episode. If you give us ideas, please don't go and put the same ideas in Helping Future Self Discord server and let them do that again. Please. we know their strategy. We found their strategy out. I don't know. They must have a scout or something in our server.
Yeah, no. I don't think, or
if you've got strong opinions about matchups and deck archetypes as well, we're very, very happy to hear them as well, to try and really give them, because matchups is something where I don't have the time in my week to plan out the matchups. I don't, like with Jonas Kandika, which is one of our guests that we had on, he talked about looking at the matchups and forge casting his matchups. I don't have the time for that. So if any ideas, any things that people can bring forth to bring into our conversation, that would be really good. But today we're going to talk about Ember Control. And Ember Control, there are four types of Ember Control that we've been discussing. Those four types of Ember Control. There might be a fifth or sixth, but the way we see this is steal, capture, lose Ember, and taxing. Taxing basically means raising the key cost. And out of these four, there are, I think, main, there's a lot of creatures, but there's mainly, I think, action cards, which especially with capturing and losing Ember, that we're going to go through. Do you have a favorite, Hydro?
So early on when the game released, everyone was into the steel, I guess, because I mean, from objectively, it's probably the best one. Like, you take Amber objectively in terms of furthering your win condition, because you take Amber away from your opponent and you give it to yourself. So you're stopping your opponent and you're helping yourself.
Yes.
So if favorite means what you most want to see in your deck, then maybe that's stealing, because that's really going to help you a lot. Maybe most fun for me is maybe taxing. I enjoy taxing in different ways, either putting out a creature that my opponent can't deal with and not allowing them to make any keys because the cost is just too high, or to bring it out at exactly the right timing to make them pay a lot more for the key. Both of those are very fun. It feels like you have executed on a good plan. Like stealing, you just play, you fire and forget, you steal, it's yours, and it's over. Mm. While taxing is usually something you have to plan. You have to either protect your creature or you have to play a card at the right time to get a big benefit. So,
I mean, playing that, you know, that you see they have 11 ember, you know, they forge at 6 and they're halfway to their, I don't know, 18, 17%. Hang on, do math there.
so they 80, would be
83% or something on the way to their next key.
Yeah.
There we go. Switch the math around there. But then you can raise the key cost to 11, so they pay full. Yeah. They get their key, but they pay full. Yeah. So they can't. Yeah. Really, really good.
Which one is your favorite?
Steel has been my favorite for a long time, obviously, because it's the Ember Swing. They had it, you have it now, you can forge, that's fair enough. But I feel something happened in Worlds Collide where the Exalt mechanic came into the game, which brings in more Ember into the game. Onto either your cards or the other cards as if they were captured. And so that just means that if there's more Ember in the game, it speeds the game up, someone's going to get the Ember some way and more keys are going to be forged. So in a good way to control the game, especially if you're not drawing well, if there's ways where you can make your opponent lose the Ember, get the Ember back off the board, and then you can control the game so that you control what you're doing and stick to your game plan. And so I think losing Ember has actually been a little bit more valuable to me in the recent games that I've been playing.
Hmm.
Not as obvious was one as well. So I think that's currently that's one of, I wouldn't say it's my favorite, but it's one of those things which I'm getting a lot of value out of right now.
So I think they have probably increased the value of loss effects. Like I feel like with the Infernus and I don't know, Evil Twin Colonia and stuff like that, they have added more cards that are about taking Ember away completely from the game.
Mm.
And I think interesting because there are a lot of ways to make Ember. And like you say, stealing, you take it with the Amber, but it doesn't make the game slower because you take it's still the same amount of total Amber in the game. You take your opponent's Amber and it's in your pool, and the capture, it's sort of like a delay more than taking Amber away completely. But loss completely takes the Amber away, so it kind of slows the game down, which is interesting because you make a lot of Amber from Amber on cards, from reaping. And it's nice to balance that out a bit that you have ways to extend the game by completely taking Amber away. That can be, I'm not sure if it's what you want in your deck more than steal. You probably want steal more in most situations, not all, but it's interesting for the balance of the game, I think.
Yeah. Well, it depends how much Ember control that your opponent has in their deck as well, because obviously if you steal, until you forge that key, the Ember is still in the game.
Yeah,
and it's there for your opponent to steal back.
Yeah, that's true.
If they have it as well, so losing the Ember from the game, like I said, I feel is such a strong way for you to take control back of playing your game.
If you have a real
opponent to play the game,
if you have a control deck that really wants to extend the game and then win at the end with a situation where your opponent can't claw back, then losing is probably better than stealing for this reason, because that Amber is completely out of the game.
Yeah.
So like I would say that the deck we talked about, Zaramis deck, Helena, which has a bunch of Infernus and it doesn't make any Amber at all until it has purged out all your board control, purged out all your Amber, And then he basically makes no amber for six turns. And then eventually he has built a situation where he has creatures on the board. The opponent has no ways to deal with it. And then he can just reap out and win. So yeah. in that kind of deck, loss is better than steal because it completely takes the amber away and neutralizes your opponent's steal cards. Yeah.
Yeah. Or combo decks as well. Yeah, if you've got a really strong combo deck, having the lose thing as well, so just giving yourself the time to set up your combo, set up your game-winning combo, you know, just get to check, get the keys, but, you know, keeping your opponent even off that first check becomes important. So a little bit on Ember Control there. Interesting to hear how you feel about Ember Control, how important it is for you. I feel it's like one of the most important statistics of a deck. You know, you can't having no Ember Control is like the reversal dream deck.
So one of my Diamond League decks that has performed very well has two cards that control Ember. It has a Dexter, which you want to discard most of the time.
Yeah.
And it has a Crump. And that's the only things.
Well, you've just treated me wrong. I'm going to shut up. Should we just shut the podcast down?
So the reason
you're
is
just showing me up here. I have no idea what I'm talking about.
The reason that deck works so well is because it has an extreme amount of Dust Pixies and that kind of thing that just makes Amber super quick. So
yeah, okay.
So some decks don't need it, but
no. But I just say it's the first thing I look for. I think if I'm opening up a new deck or if I'm looking at a deck another time, it's how much Ember Control does this have. Because if you up against those tough decks where the game's just going on forever, you always need to have that answer in your hand. You need to have the answer to get them off check and just keep going backwards and forwards. Yes, the games might be going on to 20, 22 turns if you haven't already gone to time. but yeah, how do you feel about Ember Control is our big question of the episode.
To the audience,
yeah. We've already answered that.
Yeah. So.
Okay, cool. So we're gonna do kind of go through just a couple of cards, some of our favorite cards in this section and why we like them as well. But maybe again, there's a lot of really huge cards that we haven't talked about, but these are just some of our favorites from thing. Hydro, go for it. You are welcome to take the first shot.
Okay, so I will start with a card that is about Amber Loss then.
Yes.
And the card I want to mention, which is my favorite, maybe favorite Amber Control card in the game completely, is Doorstep to Heaven.
yes.
And what this card says, it says it's an action card. It gives you pip. It's in Sanctum, uncommon, and it says play each player with six or more Amber loses all but five of it. So an important category of Amber Control cards are so-called scaling Amber Control cards that force your opponent, that basically if your opponent has a lot of Amber, you take a lot of it away. And out of all these, I think this is the best one. A lot of people will say Too Much to Protect is the best one because you steal all that Amber over six, but Too Much to Protect, it only takes them to six, not to five.
You need to have that second card to get them off check.
Yeah, you can't stop your opponent from winning with Too Much to Protect. No. Same with something like Interdimensional Graft. That one, they still get a key. You just get the rest, so you can get a lot of Amber, but you can't stop your opponent from winning with that card. But Doorstep to Heaven, it will guarantee to take your opponent off check unless you have some of those very rare effects that bring key costs down. I just really like that card a lot. And I really like how it synergizes with everything Sanctum wants to do with capture, and it synergizes with whatever kind of Amber Control you have in your other houses that bring the key cost up or whatever that makes your opponent go high, and then you take them down. Yeah, I really like it.
Yeah, this I'm just reading the flavor text here as well. It's quite beautiful. The cities of the Sanctum are safe, clean, and vibrant like few others on the Crucible, but few are judged worthy to enter.
Yeah, that's that feels a bit bad. I guess yeah. That's like they're keeping everyone out. But yeah, but I mean, it is an asshole card, so I guess it fits that. It's kind of the flavor text fits in that way.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, especially taking someone from possibly, you know, 20, 22 Ember that they may have saved up or stolen from you, and just out, bam.
You know, the season I won the Nordic Keyforge League, the deciding game, which was the second game, I think, which I needed to win, the only way I could win was if I played Wild Wormhole, and the top card was Doorstep to Heaven. And that happened.
Beautiful.
And that allowed me to extend the game until I could win. So, yeah. So I have a soft spot for that card for that reason as well.
I completely understand that. I do like that card, especially of one of the other things. I can't remember. I think it was the same deck, the Dark Tidings deck that I played in the Swindle Team events. Is there aren't many. I haven't got as much Ember control when the opponent is at six.
Mm.
I've got lots of stuff, you know, when the opponent, Gatekeeper, where if they're seven or more,
They captures.
Five. Yeah, bring low, et cetera, et cetera. But there's not much there that takes them down from six.
Hmm.
And I struggled to beat my own deck because my, you know, although I struggled to win a game. Because, and I think it was against DS Santos, who in the Portuguese Keyforge Portugal team, and I think he saw this, and so he only ever got to six, and so I couldn't get him off check because he got to six. His Doorstep to Heaven would have been perfect for that. Yeah,
yeah, that's, no, definitely, that's a good play by him.
Yeah, yeah. Cool. Well, my first card then, keeping in the whole idea of losing Ember and scaling Ember control, and I mean, this is probably one of the biggest cards in the game, I think, my first card. And I just love it because a well-timed Effervescent Principle, you can't argue with. So Effervescent Principle, it's a Logos card. It is a action card, and it reads, play, each player loses half of their Ember, rounding down the loss, gain one chain. And yeah, I playing this at the right time, bringing this down, you know, you've just forged a key, bam. It's just one of those, and it's one of those cards which is a red flag for me when banning a card, you know, Infernus, Effervescent Principle, double, triple Grey Rider. Those kinds of cards.
It's for banning for the Keyforge League.
Banning for the Nordic Keyforge League, as well, when I'm choosing my bans in there or in a triad. And it's just one of those cards where it's worth, you gain a chain for playing it, but it's worth keeping in your hand. It's worth I was taking that, you know, taking that chain during the game as well until you get a chance to play it, because it's such a strong card. And sometimes it's worth taking yourself down from 5 to 3.
It's interesting. We touched on this before, but it was interesting. In Kota, it was kind of considered a bad card because you had bait and switch before they nerfed it, which could steal about that much that you could make your opponent lose with Effervescent. You had too much to protect. You had Doorstep. You had Interdimensional Graft. But most of those cards went away for later sets, and in Mass Mutation, Effervescent Principle was kind of the premier. It was the best mass loss card in the game that took Amber away and punished your opponent for going high. And they gave, I think it gave kind of a new appreciation for that card in the community. So that was kind of interesting.
Yeah. And I love the Dark Tidings adaptation of this Submersive Principle, giving that, you know, watery effect to it, where you have the option to. No, it's with the tide, isn't it? If the tide is
high, they if the tide is low, both players lose one.
Yes.
If the tide is high, both players lose half the amber, like Effervescent Principle.
Exactly. Yeah. But I still, and even though it's nice to have the choice to just take the one, so you just lose the one. Mm. This one, the Effervescent Principle, I think is still the better card. I think it's still the better one because, you know, if you don't have the tide, it doesn't cost you three chains.
Yeah, then it's just one chain. One chain is hurts a lot less than three chains, I guess. I also like the flavor of the card Effervescent Principle. I didn't even know what the word effervescent meant when I first saw the card, but it's do you know what it means? From your face, it looks like you don't know what it means. So effervescent means it's something that's related to bubbles. An effervescent principle is something, it would be like a law that says a bubble will eventually burst or something like that.
Okay.
So basically, and that makes sense. It's like your opponent are in a bubble, they gained a lot of amber, and then you have the law that bubbles burst, that takes them down. I think that's kind of fun.
Great. So should we look at the your second card?
Okay. So my second card is a capture card. And it's Anthony, or if we the way it's spelt is with like leet speak, so it's like Ant1-10NY, but it's pronounced Anthony, and it's uncommon from Mass Mutation Star Alliance. It's a 6 power creature that says, play, capture all of your opponent's amber. At the end of your turn, move one amber from Anthony to your opponent's pool. So what I like about this guy is he's really hard to kill. 6 power is a lot. And capturing all your opponent's amber, that's a really big late game swing. If they are a check for the third key and you just take 6 amber away, they gain 1 back every turn, sure, but that gives you a lot of time to grind out the win anyway. And you have some really fun synergies if you have this with Transport a Platform.
I was just going to say Transport a Platform. Yeah, I love that combo.
Yeah, because it's like, unless you kill him, I'm just going to bounce him every turn and you can never win.
Transport a Platform, if you don't know what that is, it's a Star Alliance artifact which has an action, return a friendly creature and each upgrade attached to it to their owner's hands.
Yeah,
with the flavor text, don't be afraid.
Yeah, that one is, and considering how teleportation probably works in the Star Trek universe, you probably should be afraid.
I completely agree.
because you probably kill. Yeah, you probably your old self is probably gone forever. But that's a philosophical discussion. Yeah, I really like that card and that combo, and it's also an interesting mechanic that you give the amber back, so that makes it so that it's not completely overpowered, which is why they could print such a strong effect at uncommon, that kind of concession in there. So great card. Fun to play around also. If your opponent has it and you have cards that can move amber between creatures, you can put it on him and it gets to your pool at the end of your turn and at the end of their turn and that kind of thing. So it's just a card that opens up for interesting scenarios for both players.
Take control. Any take control cards where you can take control of it.
That doesn't seem like a good idea, I guess.
I'm thinking of Exile.
Which
is a completely different scenario whatsoever. So if you have Exile and you can Exile Anthony onto
your
opponent's side. That's where I'm going with this as well.
Yeah.
Wow, you're really showing. I'm really showing myself up for this episode, aren't I?
No, I mean, you just said the wrong word. That's fine.
I said the wrong five words in a row. yeah, great. No, Antony, I absolutely love it. And in one of my favorite decks, I have the Antony Transporter platform.
Nice.
I think I've got a Medic Ingram in there as well to ward it, which actually, you know, if I want to keep it out there, then that's useful.
Yeah, because you can still fight with him to remove the ward if you want to use the platform.
Definitely, again. And with a load of, you know, upgrade him as much as you can. Upgrade, come back into your hand, keep getting that Ember. Beautiful, beautiful card. Cool.
Okay, so what's your second card?
My second card is, I'm going Saurian, and I'm going for action card with one pip of Ember, and my card is Tribute. Play the most powerful friendly creature, captures two. You may exalt that creature to repeat the preceding effect. I mean, this is just a beautiful card. I mean, we're talking five, four Ember. I mean, like we talked about, you said before we started recording, you know, not many cards can actually take someone off check when they have nine Ember. And I think my favorite thing with this card is if you've got it with a deck with a Shrix, calligraphian ideal,
Calypedian. I don't know how to pronounce it. I know what it means. It's very funny. If you look,
I mean,
at
everyone,
the
arc. Everyone who knows Keyforge knows the card we're talking about.
I mean, just
this, especially getting, you know, capturing on a thing. If you can protect it and spend the Ember next turn, such a strong card. I think I remember playing in a game a couple of seasons ago against Yonder King, where I just absolutely destroyed him with this tribute combo onto Shrix. I could be getting the opponent wrong as well, and he was just silent on the other side of TCO for a couple of minutes. I was like, no. I think
he was just pondering his life decisions.
I think so, because it's just such a swing, and it's such an easy key if your opponent has the Ember is about to do, and it's an easy just a swing from them on check for their third key to you on check for their third key. Add an Imperial Forge in there before you check, then before you finish your turn, and it becomes very, very powerful.
Something I like about Tributes, when this card was released in Worlds Collide, it was like a statement. They were saying, okay, so before the game was all about steel, but actually now it's going to be about other things. Now we're going to have, in Kota, capture was considered almost worthless, but now we have a capture card that's one of the most powerful commons in the Worlds Collide set. And that's an interesting statement, I think. And it changed how the game was played by a lot of players in some ways.
So I'm
a big fan of Tribute as well.
I felt like there's a lot of capture in Age of Ascension as well. A lot of Sanctum cards that captured.
There are some, and
it was almost like, okay, that's great, but, you know. And this, again, it's the exalting thing, where if you're exalting your creatures, you're bringing more Ember into the game, which can allow them to do that. And so that exalt becomes the choice. Do I want to overpower my card by putting something Ember into the game, which my opponent is craving? He's putting a target on that guy's back. But Tribute is just, it's just too good to not play.
I like the flavor aspect, that it's, you're capturing on your most powerful creature, so you're paying tribute. It's like you're forcing your opponent to pay tribute to your most powerful creature.
And that's a really important detail.
It also changes, it also makes a card a bit less useful, which is interesting, because you can't always put it on Shrix, for example. You have,
and I've made that mistake twice in very important games. Being like, oh yes, I've a tribute Shrix on the board. This is beautiful. That's fine. Oh, hang on a second. why is it only wanting me to put it on an ODAC?
Yeah, and that's super. You put your Shrix out. I've done this. I put my Shrix out. I put my Skarm on Shrix, and I'm like, here we go, tribute. Oh wait.
I know. It makes me look like such a noob to the game. When I play tribute and they're like, why are you doing that now? Why didn't you play that before you played your Gargantadon? I'm thinking, I don't know why. Can I take it back? Nope. Yeah. Yeah, so tribute was just one of those things. When we spoke about this topic, I was like, okay, tribute is straight into my top three. Cool. But perhaps this isn't the real card. Perhaps this is just the tribute. Couldn't resist. And at perhaps 45 minutes after we started recording, we'll probably see everyone switching off. Before you do that, please, Hydro, give us your third card before we lose any more listeners.
Okay, so my third card is Ronnie Wristclocks.
Ooh, love a Ronnie.
And this is a Shadows common who first appeared in Age of Ascension and then was reprinted in Worlds Collide. It's a two-power creature who has the play effect. Play, steal one. If your opponent has seven or more, steal two instead. And what I like about this is that it's really nice to have a card that, I mean, a lot of decks, they have ways to stop your opponent at six amber. So a lot of opponents, they will be tempted to go to seven instead to protect themselves against a card that says play steal one or play capture one. And then Ronnie, he punishes your opponent for going to seven because then you have to steal two. So when you're up against Ronnie, either you have to go to six and hope your opponent doesn't have a card that takes one ember away, or you have to go to eight and set up a bunch of other big steel cards or other scaling control cards. So he really puts your opponent in an awkward situation. And even at six is very good because it still stops the check. So whether you want to take one amber right now because you draw him early and it's just one steel is always good. If you can stop the key at six, that's good. If you can stop your opponent at seven, that's good. Or if you steal two at eight and they still get the key, you still stole two, so it's still good. So he can really, he's a really fun card, I think.
Yeah, a lot of fun. And it's one of those things because it's not just about taking your opponent down from six to five, that it gives you a case for if there's anything that you have to do which will allow your opponent to gain a number. Then play Ronnie Wristclocks. It means that you get the extra as well. Maybe you have a Francis, the Economist, on the board.
Probably not in the same set as Ronnie, but you might have a Brend, the Fanatic.
Or Brend, yeah. Those kind of cards which, you get your opponent up to the seven so that you can steal the two and you get the extra and you get the swing becomes a little bit bigger in favor of yourself. Even if you maybe have too much protect, do you want to play beforehand, take them down to six, take them to seven, down to five. A lot of those things as well. And I like the fact that you can always steal the one as well. I mean, there's the Logos action card, isn't
Cutthroat
there?
Cutthroat Research.
Yeah, which, when your opponent has eight, steal two. There's quite a high request or a high ask for stealing the two there. This gives that thing where you're always getting some value there.
And I like the flavor of the card. It's like he looks like some kind of street salesman selling fancy stuff that's probably stolen. And probably not even like it's probably like fake. It's like counterfeit. Like it's imitations, cheap imitations of expensive stuff. And he's like selling it. And if you are like his flavor text is, you look like an Archon with discriminating tastes. So if you have a lot of money, he takes more because you buy some useless stuff that he's asking even more from. So yeah, that's funny, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Great. Ronnie is in the bag. My third card is probably my all hot top favorite card of the game, and I can either confirm or deny that my secondborn son has anything to do with the name of my secondborn son has anything to do with this card.
I heard they named it after your secondborn son.
I heard that as well, yeah. And we got a little bit of time traveler stuff in there as well, where obviously
we got into a fight with help from future self and weird things happen.
Wow, I like that. Yeah, maybe war isn't that bad after all.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
I mean, you know, okay. Let's try and dig myself out of this call. Yeah, so we're talking about Edai. Eddie 4x4 is my favorite card in the game because it's a Logos creature, 3 power with no armor. And it says, play archive a card. Your opponent's keys cost +1 for each card in your archives. And I mean, I've talked about my 3 Eddie deck before with so much archive power. This goes in the the taxing category as well, because it is also is scaling tax. Can we maybe coin that term or something?
I mean, that's just progressive taxation. That's
progressive
just,
taxation. Because I mean, the more you archive, the more the opponent's keys are going to cost, and it's got so much potential there, especially if you can recur it, if you can get it back out on the board. Of course, it's the first card that anyone's going to want to destroy, but I have in a game I have managed to get a opponent's key cost up to 78.
Oh wow. How many E-dice do you have to do
I
that?
Had 3 E-dice on the board.
Oh wow.
And 79. I had 26 cards in my in my archives. And I also have an interdimensional graft.
Okay, that's sweet thing. Yeah.
Is that the right card I'm talking about? The one where we can either gain archive a card or gain.
Oh no, that's knowledge is power. But that's
knowledge is power. Okay, let's cut that bit.
No, it's fine.
I have a knowledge is power in this deck as well, and so I just managed to get them on the board, protect them, and I hit 26 Ember, and so after forging my last key, the key cost was at 78, and I had 23 left at the end of the game. I mean, games like that don't happen often with that deck, but this card is just so much fun to play with, and it's just one of those decks, one of those types of decks which I always try and find a reason to try and buy an Eddie deck,
and it's interesting. Like you say, he is a target, or it is a target. And that can be good for you as well if you have some recursion in your deck.
Yeah.
Your opponent has to be careful when they kill him, because if you can just shuffle him back into the deck or play him from the discard pile, he helps you do that when he kills it. So you need to be very careful with
that. Yeah, which is actually what was happening in that game. Yeah. Because obviously they have to get them off the board to play them. It's just that I had archived already 20, 21 cards. Mm. So they just kept on coming backward and back and back and back. And I just kept on, And the nice thing was they were always well-placed through the deck. So I always had an Eddie in hand. And when you're archiving, if you're just archiving, if especially if you have a dud house, maybe it's in Worlds Collide. So, you know, if you had this in Brobnar decks.
Yeah, that's one of my league decks.
Yeah, you can just archive your Brobnar creatures and get your good cards out more and more. Sorry, Brobnar fans. Eddie is my thing. And I think before realizing that Taxation was one of those, the big Ember Control cards, then they, and especially getting them the nice thing, I mean, you've already made this point before as well, but the nice thing to do with Eddie, especially getting to the people to that place of going, okay, I've got five cards in my archive, they have 12 Ember, they can do two keys pretty easily, they're sticking Eddie down, end the go, and they've got to spend 12 on their thing as well. Yes, they get their key, but they only get one instead of two. And that's probably one of the favorite things, most favorite things I like doing with my Eddies.
Really good card. My favorite Worlds Collide deck, it's based on, well, either it has just the one Edai, but it's very important for that deck.
And it's one of those things, it's so much fun to play, but you've got to, it's one of those things, you've got to be able to get your deck to get them in the right time, get them playing at the right time, to make the most of them. Great. Well, that was our Ember Control favorite cards from the set. What are your favorite cards that you have which control Ember? Are there any huge combos that you have as well? We would love to hear them, because I think Ember Control is such an important part of this game. So it'll be great to return to this, and I think we'll return to this when we can get some of the other hosts back in to answer this as well. And we hope to get some of the back in as well. I mean, just people are just generally busy as well. But Linus, we talk to him now and then. He's just busy being a dad. Zaramis he just wasn't available tonight. And Carl, who hopefully we're going to get on as a regular host as well, he wasn't available tonight as well. But hopefully we'll be able to do an episode soon with all of us coming in as well. But they will say hello and Happy New Year as well. Great. We need to do a league update.
The update we can do is, I think the deadline for registering your lineup is the 10th of January. Is that correct?
Don't ask me, and if I try, I'll be wrong.
Let me check NKFL announcements. Yes. So the submission deadline is the 10th, and the league will start on the 17th. And then I think currently we have a certain number of divisions. I don't remember exactly how many, but we have 5 people on the waiting list.
Ooh.
So if we get 3 more people who want to join and no more people who quit, then that would open up another division, which would be fun as well.
Yes, exactly. So if you're considering getting involved in probably one of the hardest formats in the game, it's a great challenge. You'll learn so much more about your own decks that and playing them in a very high level of play, and have a really good time with a really good community, then come and get involved and make 5 people's dreams come true.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Exactly. I think the Miners have started as well. The Miners Season 2 have started, which is a really fun format that we've got going, that's run by Carl and Algonon and Johnny Yonder King, where they have 3 SAS caps and you pick 4 decks for your season. And the Cup this season, do you know what the Cup format is? Has that been?
Yes, I think it's... I think it's SAS cap 70, or sorry, SAS cap 69, I guess. It has to be below SIF 70, so the cap is 69.
Yep.
And it's some kind of double elimination, but there might be some special rules with that as well, like something like you can choose any of your two decks in the winner's bracket, but then when you lose with it, it's not available. In the, I'm not sure. I don't remember that part. There might be something more to it. But the main thing is it's 69 Saskap.
Yeah. Yeah, so if you're already in our Discord, go and check the League Cup announcements as well. I feel like our league, this area is kind of going downhill in our presentation of league somehow. but I get things wrong all the time, so go and read and don't listen to us.
I'm reasonably confident that it's below 70 Saskap at least, so that part you can trust.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people going, you know, getting excited about 69 being the number for some reason, but I don't quite get that.
yeah, you're a family man, so you can't talk about those things.
Yeah, I mean, things like that just go straight over my head.
Okay.
But apart from that, I'm not quite sure what's going on. But if you know, if you've got a couple of few weaker decks, then please. Yeah, get involved in the cup there as well. That would be a fun one to be involved. Great. Well, that is it from us this week. We look forward to hearing your thoughts on both the Ember Control decks and also matchups, the matchups question that we did as well, just to help us get a little bit of feel for what the people feel about matchups and archetypes as well. That will help us to put together a real, hopefully, kick-ass episode on that one as well. And yeah, do you have anything to say? Any final words of the episode, Hydro?
Not really. Have a good new year. Happy New Year, everyone.
Have you made any New Year's resolutions?
No. I don't do that kind of thing. Because...
I'm gonna forge more.
Okay, that's good.
My resolution. Because if I forge more, I go up in the divisions and you know, yeah, improving my league stats is one resolution as well as going to the gym. Two big resolutions. Cool. So last words from me. All I can say is forge on and prosper. Good night.
Good night, everyone.